Hey, uplifters. I want to take a minute to talk about something personal to me. In my 40s, I started noticing my hair was shedding more. So a couple of months ago, I started using Nutrafol. I'm already seeing so much less shedding. And my teenage daughter, who notices absolutely everything, keeps commenting on how thick my hair looks. As someone who's built my career around rigorous science, I super love that Nutrafol was the first brand to clinically study hair thinning on menopausal women, which is why I am so proud to have them as a sponsor. Nutrafol takes a whole body approach to hair health, supporting you throughout your life stages. You can see thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code UPLIFTERS. Welcome to the UPLIFTERS podcast, where every week we talk to a woman who shows us what's possible when we muster the self-belief to really show up for the things that matter to us. This month, we're focusing on late bloomers. Today, we're talking to Carly Swaim, an unofficial world record holder for joggling. Carly, when you shared your story with me, I was like, oh my gosh, this is serious, massive uplifter material. Thank you for taking time out to hang with me.
Thank you for having me.
So we got to lead with the elephant in the room. I don't know what the metaphor is here, but I'm pretty sure that 90% of the people who are listening to this are like, did she just say joggling? So tell folks what joggling is.
Yes, it's a real word, and I promise I didn't make it up. So it's a combination of two words, which is jogging and juggling. And it's when you combine the two activities and you do it at the same time. And there's somewhere in the vicinity of 800 jogglers in the world who have gone and done this in public races.
Amazing. Now, you're not a full-time joggler.
Nah.
What do you do with the rest of your time?
So my paid job is I do accounting, so that pays for the hobbies I do enjoy. And then I do love joggling. I will do juggling also just by itself.
You weren't always a jogger or a juggler or a joggler, were you?
No. I was active while I was in school, but as soon as I graduated from college, I didn't exercise at all. In fact, when my husband and I were looking for a house, I said the only requirement was that it have stairs because that's going to be my only form of exercise. And you get into your 30s, and I'm like, I should probably exercise. And at the time, my work was very demanding. I didn't have a lot of free time. So going to classes at a gym didn't usually work out. I was always very tired. And I stumbled upon a free juggling workshop on my lunch break during work. And I stopped after passing by it for a year because I was like, why not? It's free. And it was on my lunch break, so I could squeeze it in. And that was the first form of exercise in a really long time that I could stick with. And running was accessible, but I really didn't like it. And the person who taught me how to juggle said, well, why don't you try to combine the two and run while you juggle? Like, okay, maybe. And I started giving it a try, by myself on very quiet streets where I wasn't going to kill anybody, including myself. And after a year of practicing by myself, I realized I was really, really bad at it and I wasn't getting anywhere. And I realized, oh, right, maybe I should learn how to run first, too. So my neighbor across the street was doing a couch to 5K all women's running group with her best friend. And so I did that. And then once I could run, then I tried to combine them again and worked much better.
Oh my gosh. I love that you started all of this at once.
Yeah. I ask around and the other jogglers, and most of them I'd say started out as really good runners and they learned the juggling. Some did the opposite, but I'm the only one that I've heard of so far that tried to learn both at the same time.
When you started juggling specifically, what was it about it that you were like, huh, I might want to do more of this?
It just felt like something clicked that never clicked before. And I had actually tried to teach myself how to juggle for 20 years from about the age of 10 to 20. And I just kept failing and didn't try anything different. And when I stopped by this workshop group in Bryant Park in New York City, they actually had instructors and they taught me the correct way to do it. And then they were just so warm and welcoming. And it was the first environment that I really had that I felt safe to fail in. I didn't have that before. And just having all of a sudden a positive experience from failing, it was just like, I just wanted more of that. So I kept showing up and kept coming back.
What was your relationship to failing before?
Oh, it was horrible. It was my greatest fear is to fail. Like, I didn't think that was acceptable. You were just somehow supposed to magically know how to do it perfect the first time.
Totally a reasonable expectation. But I think it's true for so many of us, right? That we think I might as well not try if right. I can't do it perfectly right out of the gate.
Yes, that's how I try to operate. And as you can imagine, it didn't work very well.
Looking back, in what ways did that hold you back?
It held me back in everything. You know, it prevented me from committing to things. It prevented me from learning how to problem solve. I've struggled greatly to problem solve. I was afraid that if I clicked the wrong button, something would blow up and be irreversible damage. And so I never explored things unless I felt very, very safe about it. And that really held me back from learning, from growing, from trying to evolve in any way, shape, or form.
And so it sounds like finding a safe place to get instruction and yes. information is what started to break through for you mm-hmm. that maybe it would be okay to be bad at things in order to get better at them.
Yeah. And just seeing also when things don't go wrong, like you can recover from that, you can change. And the person who was teaching me to juggle at Bryant Park, his name is Jeff, he would throw me something brand new, literally throw me an object that in a very different way that we had practiced without even warning. He wouldn't be give me a heads up or say like, hey, I think you're ready to try this. He would just throw it at me out of nowhere with no warning and be like, what is this? And sometimes I would catch it, sometimes I wouldn't, but I'd be like, this is, I don't know what's going on. And then I started to learn how to react to things that I wasn't planning for. And that was my big thing. That was my safety net. I need to plan for everything. And it taught me how to react to things that I had not planned for.
Oh my gosh. And what does that mean now in other areas of your life?
It just, the amount of stress in my life has significantly decreased. I'm just at peace more with things. I don't worry so much. I don't worry about how much other people perceive me either, because that was another perfect thing. Like, I have to make sure everybody likes me. I don't hold to that anymore.
And so this idea of somebody will toss me something unexpected, I'll catch it or not. Do you see that neural pathway shifting how you perceive other unexpected events in life?
Yes, I'm able to connect the dots in my brain and follow through a path much more quickly. I'm able to solve problems much more quickly. And I did see an actual like physical reaction to this too. So going back to the being thrown something unexpected, my brain did not like that at first. So I think what was happening was my brain was processing it as being attacked, and I experienced something called a visual migraine, where you don't actually get a headache, but what happens is you temporarily lose your vision. You get this wavy band that expands over about the course of an hour, and it feels like you're losing your vision temporarily. It was very scary the first time it happened. I went to the, you know, the walk-in clinic. I'm like, what's going on? And they said, you know, it's fine, it'll go away, but here's a Tylenol. And as soon as I took that, it went away. But it just goes to show how deeply ingrained my whole system was in this safe box. And to just be pulled out of it for a second, my whole system didn't know how to handle it.
Wow. How extraordinary that you were able to see that for what it was, which was data about the shift you were making in your mind in relationship to responding to things out of your control.
Yeah.
Wow. And so you talk about having been active in your youth, but did you see yourself as an athlete, as a potential unofficial world record holder?
I sort of felt like I pretended to be an athlete, but I never pushed myself. Every time something felt hard, I said, oh, no. And so many times I would get close to the finish line and I would just quit right before. And I'm like, that's good enough. And I never won anything. I never got awards for anything because I was never willing to go the extra mile to push myself for anything.
I'm so glad you brought this up. This has been such a focus of curiosity for me lately, both in my own life and my clients and in the guests that we hear from on this show. And I do think there is a bit of a dividing line in terms of our level of courage and self-belief and willingness to do big, hard things, and that feeling of being willing to cross the line into challenge. Alexi Pappas, in her book Bravey, talks about how she learned how to be uncomfortable, and that shifting that threshold is what allowed her to train to a level that she was able to compete at the Olympic level. And so I try to channel her a lot in my own life, her and founders I know who just do hard things all day. But it's scary, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredibly scary. Yes. That's the biggest deterrent.
Yeah. And it's like, what might happen? And so you talked about sort of the perfectionist side of it, but what did you worry would happen if you weren't good?
I guess it was a fear of rejection. I'm not really sure. It was very irrational. I didn't think through that part.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just sort of this unknown, mushy,
right,
negative consequence.
Yes.
Yeah.
The fear of the unknown.
Uh-huh. And since then, have you started to shift what you say to yourself in times of challenge?
Yes. Yes. And just knowing that I've done it before, the not that specific task, but I've faced this feeling of fear before and I came out on the other side and the world didn't blow up. So just knowing that I've faced similar fears and I've felt this really uncomfortable feeling and I've been able to push through it, and it's not something that I need to run away from anymore.
And how has that impacted your personal life, your professional life?
Well, now that I've done running, I've met all these different people in Monmouth County who do all these running groups, and I've met new friends. It's made a huge difference in my professional life. I had been laid off from a few jobs, and there was never something that I did like critically wrong, but I never rose to the occasion that in the way that I needed to before. And one thing that joggling specifically taught me how to do was combat a built-in defense mechanism that I had used ever since I was very young. And that was, when I felt stressed, I would start daydreaming. I would choose to disassociate from the stress. And it was so, my body needed it so much that it would happen without my knowledge. And I wouldn't realize I was doing it until it stopped. And that could be 5 minutes, could be 30 minutes. And you can imagine when you're employed doing a job and you just zone out for 30 minutes, that's not going to be very good on your performance. And I didn't know how to control it because I never knew when it started. You know, sometimes people would see me with my eyes glazed over and they would tell me, and I would stop it earlier. I would come back to earlier than if it just played out, but I still didn't know when it started. And with joggling, whenever I would drop, it would be because I started to feel stressed out and I zoned out and I started daydreaming. And it was an instant, for the first time in my entire life, I had an instant physical cue of when I started to daydreaming. And I never had that ever. And for the first time in 32 years of my existence, I had a way of knowing when this condition, when this defense mechanism started in my body, and I could control it for the first time.
Oh my gosh. And so does that not happen at work anymore?
No, it doesn't.
Huh.
At first, it took a while. I would recognize it was happening and I would be able to stop it within a few minutes. And now it doesn't happen at all.
Wow. That's really cool. And it's like it raised your level of awareness, both of what the symptoms were and the effects.
Right. And I've been at my current job now for 8 years. I've received 2 different promotions. People come to me for guidance and support and all the answers. And that would have never happened if I hadn't learned how to joggle.
Bonkers.
Yeah, it literally changed my life.
Like, when you say that, what most strikes you about that sentence?
Just people think that there's right or wrong ways to solve problems, and there's not. And I never planned to juggle. That was never on the list of maybe I should try this. It just happened because I decided to show up and give things a try. And it happened when I was in my mid 30s. I had been searching for an answer for a very long time, and I just never stopped searching. And I think that that's the message, that keep an open mind and just realize that the answer you're looking for might not be what you're looking for, and you stumble across something even better.
Mm-hmm. And it also strikes me that you said, I'm going to say yes to this opportunity to go learn how to do one thing, which was to juggle. And then allowed that to take you down a road that was totally unexpected. But I think in general, when we're in those circumstances, getting to a root need to be met and exploring meeting that in different ways can be really powerful. And to say what fits with my life, what sounds interesting and fun to me, and then see what happens. Take the data and use it. So it is this continuous process of experimentation for most of us. And I hear that coming through so loudly in your story. And you told me when we talked before that you did not see yourself as an athlete growing up.
No.
What was an athlete to you?
An athlete was someone who won.
Somebody who got the things done and they got them done right. And they got awarded for it in terms of competitive success. And that wasn't you.
Right.
Yeah, same. Me either. Do you see yourself as an athlete now?
I do, but my definition of an athlete has changed. So an athlete is somebody who pushes themselves physically, and it doesn't necessarily matter at what level, except that it's a level that's pushing you.
I love that. And what does that mean for you now as a juggler?
It means that I don't have to be at some made-up level to be good. I can define my own level and just do something that's creative and fun, but that pushes me. And as long as I'm being challenged, that's the important part.
Do you think of yourself as a late bloomer?
Yes. I think of myself as a late bloomer and trusting myself.
Say more about what it means to trust yourself.
I mean, trusting yourself is everything. If you doubt everything that you do, not only is that going to inhibit you from doing anything efficiently, but it's also going to create a huge amount of stress. And you can't be happy if you're constantly stressed and under anxiety.
Mm-mm. No, I think of it like this whole separate conversation going on in our minds while the world is happening outside of us. And I have learned that for me, I can only process one set of words at a time.
Okay.
So I can garden and listen to a podcast and know what's going on. I can't listen to music and a podcast simultaneously. I can't email and watch television at the same time and know what's happening in both. So it's like my brain can only process one set of words at any given moment. And I think that's true for most of us. And that internal chatter that's happening is like creating all this other conversation inside our brains while we're trying to process the outside stimuli that's happening with other human beings and the rest of the outside world. And so I feel like it becomes like an incompatible circumstance if we don't learn how to quiet those inner thoughts and just tune into what's happening in the moment. What helps you quiet those doubting voices, the distrustful voices, the ones that are questioning everything?
It just helps me to try to focus on what I'm trying to do instead and try to focus on just the very next step. Like, what's the roadblock that's preventing me from moving to the next step? Is the roadblock just my fear, or is the roadblock that I don't have enough information? And am I afraid to ask for that information that I'm missing? And if I'm too afraid to ask for it, what will happen? Am I just going to get stuck here and get more stressed? So which is more stressful, being vulnerable and asking for that information I need to move forward, or just sitting in this dark space stressing out about it?
That's so good. And so what I'm hearing in that is like, the statements are saying, you're not good enough, you're not ready, you're not whatever enough. And you're turning those into question. What's behind that statement in my mind? What do I need? What am I afraid of? What's contextually is contributing to me thinking these thoughts as facts?
Yes. And I try to, just in general, I try to break down the why behind everything. Why am I feeling this? Is this a legitimate feeling for the tasks that I'm trying to do? Or is this some like caveman, you're going to die from a dinosaur type of response to survive that's no longer applicable?
Right. Or even a five-year-old response, right? So five or from when you were five, where that thought or belief served you in that moment, but may not be actually true or relevant to this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. So really grounding yourself in, is this true right now? Is this true for me right now?
Yes.
That's very cool. And so you're challenging yourself on the regular now.
Yes. You have to practice it just like everything else. You have to practice challenging yourself or you don't get good at it.
What have you found is required in order to keep you in a growth mindset with your juggling in life?
Just finding fresh ways to look at everything, finding ways that I'm continuously learning while I'm doing something. So I don't want to get stuck in a rut. I don't want to just keep doing the same thing and I'm not learning anything from it. I'm not meeting new people through it. I'm not experiencing something different. I don't focus as much on the skill level. I mean, I will give myself goals every now and then that will push that skill level, but the focus is just getting myself out of the house and just doing things. It's just the constant movement. Movement is very important for me. And one of the community tasks or challenges I gave myself was sort of a scavenger hunt to find other runners. And I gave myself a challenge over the last 4 years to find every single running group in Monmouth County, New Jersey, basically within 30 minutes of my house. And I gave myself my own rules. So I said a running group is any group that has a name and meets for a weekly group run. And I found 28 different groups. But I'd show up and I'd introduce myself and I'd go for a run with them. And I found so many different parks. I got different tips. I learned so much more about running and just experiencing everything everybody had to offer. And it was just a fun way. And it's a game. If I make it a game, I will do it.
I think that's freaking brilliant. I also love that it addresses this giant fear for so many of us, which is, I don't want to be the new person. I don't want to be the person on the outside walking in. And you said, oh no, I'm going to lean into that. And I'm going to make it actually the goal to be the new person in a whole bunch of places. Are you more comfortable being the new person in general as a result of this challenge?
As a result of this, yes. And it became less stressful every time. It was practicing myself and challenging. So the first time I showed up to a group, I was probably shaking, I don't know, but I was very nervous. And then after you show up to X amount of groups, even though the people are completely different, the run is different, the location, you think like, well, but meeting new people is very similar feeling to what I just experienced the last 12 times. So here we go again.
And now you're like an authority probably in understanding what you really like in a running group and in a community.
Yes. I have an Excel spreadsheet with all the running groups I've ever been to, what day of the week they meet, AM or PM, what type of run, road, track, boardwalk, trail. And then if I wake up early, if I wrap up things in the evening, I take out my spreadsheet, who's running right now? And I go out the door and I meet up with that group.
That's brilliant, 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 right? And you can think of how many ways this could be applied to different aspects of life. You have a remarkable ability to slow down long enough to ask yourself, what's missing? What do I want? And then to rather methodically start to build that for yourself. And I just think that for all of us, if we were to, on the regular, practice asking ourselves the big Carly question, what do I want more of? And how do I turn that idea into a set of actions? I honestly think like all our lives would be as changed as yours. You've done that in your fitness life, in your social life, in your professional life? Are there other domains or parts of your life now that you want to focus on?
The most recent big challenge that I gave myself was that unofficial world record. So as of now, I'm the only woman known to have gone at least a mile juggling four balls. And it was incredibly scary for me because I wasn't actually certain that I could do it. So when I had been training to juggle with three balls, I had given myself all this criteria that I could go a half mile without dropping. I practiced over and over again, and I had been trying to train myself on and off for a few years now with four balls and never really got very far. And I just decided, well, ready or not, here I come. And so I found a 1 mile race. And the new thing I did for this is I asked for help. So I reached out to running groups and I asked somebody if they could stick with me during the race and essentially be my eyes. Because I was not as prepared for this, because I was not as good at four balls, what it meant was I could not juggle them at a level where I could see where I was going. So I literally needed somebody to be my eyes. And I'm not the type of person who asks for help. It's very difficult for me to ask for help. And one of my friends came out, cleared his morning for me, and stood by my side. And, you know, I kept stopping and dropping, and he was just there with me the whole way. And I had given myself a goal of completing this race in 20 minutes. And with him by my side and just me knowing like, well, I can't quit. He showed up for me. I have to show up for him. I completed the race in 15 minutes.
Amazing. Amazing. On so many levels. Again, you said, what is making this harder and how can I make this easier on myself and more likely that I can follow through both through the accountability, the support, understanding what the challenge was. And again, that's what we all have the potential to do, to say like, what actually is making this hard for me? And how can I enlist a little bit of support to make it a little bit easier? Whether it's just showing up to do it, or it's showing up with my whole self to do it, or it's not tripping over my feet to do it.
Yeah.
And I happened to be there at your test run.
Yes.
And I watched you drop the balls and I watched you manage frustration and pick the balls up and keep going. And if that ain't a metaphor for life, it literally brings tears to my eyes, Carly. Like thinking of the grit that I watched you tap into in those moments. And I'm going to go do something hard today. I'm going to go work on my book proposal. It's a very different kind of hard, but there are little puzzles in there that I haven't sorted out the answers to. And every part of me in the moment wants to go walk away and go grab a snack or maybe garden or go hang out with my kids and take them thrift shopping. All those things actually sound great and they are great, but there's a time and a place for them. And there is a time and a place to pick up the frickin' balls and start juggling again. And so today, as I do that, I'm going to think of you. And I hope that everybody listening to this gets some little sense of this, oh, so simple and oh, so powerful approach to life. Because it truly is transformative, I think.
Yeah, transform my life.
What else do you want us to know?
That just because it's hard doesn't mean you shouldn't do it.
How do you decide?
If I get excited about it, I also like doing photography and I'm very decisive when I choose to take a picture or something because in that moment, I feel like a raccoon seeing something shiny. Something just grabs my attention and I'm like, I need that. And that's how I go through life. Like if something sparks joy in me, I don't second guess it. I go for it.
Oh my gosh, I freaking love that. And when along the way do we tell ourselves that wasn't enough? Over and over, right? We say like, that's not smart enough. It's not cool enough. It's not valuable enough. And yet I think what you're saying is excitement and a spark of joy is the value.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people have so much doubt, they don't even know how to recognize that spark of joy anymore because they have this protective wall around them and they're afraid to enjoy what they want to enjoy because they're afraid of people judging them or it's not the right thing to enjoy, which is ridiculous because who gets to decide that?
You.
Yeah.
For you.
Right, right. We've got this one short life to live on a spinning rock around a giant ball of fire. What are you waiting for?
That's a perfect ending. So as uplifters, we love to support and uplift others. How can we as a community help you with your goals right now?
Go out and find something you love to do that you're a little scared to do and go do it. That's the way to support me, by creating a community of people willing to do that, to show that you're willing to do that. And if somebody else sees you doing it, then they may do it. And I think we'd become a happier world if everybody just pursued what excites them.
I agree completely. I so look forward to running with you again soon and to soaking up a little bit more of this Carly magic.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Uplifters podcast. If you're getting a boost from these episodes, please share them with the uplifters in your life and then join us in conversation over at theuplifterspodcast.com. Head over to Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast and like, follow, and rate our show. It'll really help us connect with more uplifters and it'll ensure you never miss one of these beautiful stories. Mwah! Big love.
Painted water sunshine with rosemary and thyme. Dwell in the perplexing, though you find it vexing. Toss a star and hover, be your own best lover. Relish in a new prime, plant a tree in springtime. Dance with idle hindsight, bring the sun to twilight. Lift you up, whoa. Lift you up, whoa. Lift you up, whoa, lift you up, whoa, lift you up, whoa, lift you up.
In the pre-chorus, right?
Uh-huh. I was like,
"Mommy, stop crying! Mommy, stop crying! You're disturbing the peace."